Good evening, everybody.
Hello.
So we have Alicia with us tonight. She was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in 2013. She's been involved in the diabetes community since she was diagnosed. First of all, through a Facebook group for teenagers with type 1 diabetes, and then by joining Twitter. She volunteered for the youth project with Diabetes Scotland and started a blog on her journey with type 1 diabetes called Pumptastic Scott. This has expanded to include posts from other people about type 1 diabetes. So we welcome you tonight, Alicia, and I hope you can hear me okay.
Yes, hello. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. We're all looking forward to this.
I'm looking forward to it too.
I'm going to pass you over to Tony now to do his first section. Over to you, Tony.
Hello. Hi, how are you, Alicia?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you so much. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I'm not so bad. Yeah. Yeah, it's been. I'm using my phone because I've had loads of technical stuff going on, so it's like going old school.
I'm also on my phone, so don't worry.
Okay. Good. Yeah. So it's. So we've got kind of bits and pieces. So myself and Claire will be swapping between. But what we do is a kind of icebreaker. First of all, is we do what's known as the 90-second questions. Now, we can't work out whether or not it's 90 seconds per question or 90 seconds for all of the questions. We put a timer on it over the past couple of weeks, but it's just too tight. So basically, I'll ask some questions and you just answer them. So
yeah, that sounds good.
don't feel there's a clock ticking away like countdown.
Okay, so, no worries, let's go.
So question one, what is your name and occupation?
My name is Alyssa. I work in children's rights in Scotland.
Okay, question two, when were you diagnosed and how old were you?
I was diagnosed in 2013 when I was 14, so I am 26 now. I'm actually only 25. What am I talking about? I'm 25, so I've been diagnosed for 10 and a bit years.
I have that. I tend to think, how old am I this year? My dad used to always kind of say, well, if I was born in then, I wasn't one until the next year. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I need to stop aging myself up.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Always round down. Do you finger prick or use smart technology? If you use technology, what do you use?
Yeah, I use a Dexcom G6 currently. I thought I was going to be moving on to G7 too, but I got an email today saying my area isn't funding it yet, unfortunately. Okay. But I don't really finger prick anymore at all, actually.
Okay, and do you not finger prick at all for kind of... doing the my mind's gone blank, checking against the Dexcom, the calibrating?
Honestly, you don't have to calibrate Dexcom at all, which is really nice, and normally I try that, so a finger prick if I feel really hypo. Okay. Or I think it's wrong, but it's not usually wrong, to be fair, so maybe once or twice a week I'll check.
Yeah, it's kind of belt and braces, isn't it? I think I just like to occasionally make sure that the Dex is kind of telling me what I am or near enough.
For the most part, I can feel if my body is high or low. So most of the time, I think it's fine.
Okay, good. So when you finger prick, do you change your lancets every time?
I don't think I've ordered lancets in like 6 years. Honestly, no.
I don't know why I asked that. Everybody I've ever spoken to never changes every time. It's just, we need to cross that question off, Tom. That's just a stupid question.
That's only for newly diagnosed people who don't know better yet.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So pens or pump?
Pump.
Okay. What pump?
I'm on the Tandem T-Slim times two, I think.
Good.
It's called.
Yes, Control IQ?
Control IQ, yes. It's very good.
Yeah. One of the team. And okay, so question five. What is one thing, and you need to think about this, what is one thing you like about diabetes?
All the friends I've made along the way, and all the opportunities I've got. I think that was two things, but both things have been amazing, and they make my life immensely better. Not the diabetes, but the other stuff.
Okay, so good answer there. I think most of us tend to kind of use the whole peer support friends thing as a positive. One thing you don't like about diabetes?
I hate feeling like a burden, even though I know I'm not a burden. I hate when my blood sugars are high or low and it impacts on the people around me. I hate that feeling.
Okay. And how does that impact? I mean, do you get crabby or do you feel kind of vulnerable? Or
I mean, yeah. If I feel like my blood sugar is going low, I obviously I'm very nervous about hypos, for good reason. I'll talk more about that later. But I make sure that I sit down for 10, 15 minutes and don't move until it's comes back up, and I definitely don't go hypo. Whereas some people with diabetes may continue, even though I don't know if they should. But then because I have to sit down, for example, if I was on a walk with people who didn't have diabetes, then they'd have to stand and sit with me for 15 minutes while my blood sugar came back up. That feels like a big, like I'm a burden to the people around me, and I really don't like that feeling. And then when I'm high, I do get like really grouchy, to be honest. So, I just like, sometimes I forget that type 1 diabetes is classed as a disability, and when it stops me from doing things, or even stops me slightly from doing things, I'm like, oh, I forgot that.
I think it's the stubbornness in me over the years. I know again that disability thing, but I don't know about you, I don't like that label, because it's not as if I'm unable to do things. It's a tag, it's a classification.
Well, technically it is a classification, and I think I've grown, like over the past 10 years I think I have grown to accept that for me diabetes is sometimes disabling, not all the time, and I do most things that I want to do, but because I do have severe hypos, it is disabling, and when I think I'm going to go low, I feel that more than others, but okay. That's a personal choice. I class it as a disability for my body, but I totally respect that you don't see that for you and your diabetes.
Yeah, I mean, it's all personal, isn't it? Okay, so what's your to-go hypo treatment?
Lucozade Sport. Because I freak out and I like to drink all of the juice, and then I won't go extra high.
Okay, and which do you feel is worse, hypo or hyper?
Hypo.
Okay, good. Love or hate the smell of insulin?
Oh, hate it. Yeah, hate it. I feel like I'm in the hospital.
Okay. I absolutely love the smell of alcohol swabs.
They're crazy.
I know, just something really comforting about. I don't know what it is. Just it's a thing. I know. And so finally, if you're on a desert island, what three things would you take? And it can include diabetes stuff, or it doesn't need to include. So basically, three things.
I guess like a book, something to keep me occupied, some Pepsi Max so that I definitely have some, and like tinned food. And then I don't know, if I'm stranded for a long time, I won't need the diabetes stuff for long anyway, so it's fine.
Oh, you're so good. So I'd just say I'd take a TV and 600 bottles of wine, and you're so good. Oops, I think that's that's my pump bleeping.
Oh, yeah. Diabetes interrupting the diabetes chat.
Yes, indeed, God. So, brilliant. So that was over 90 seconds, but that's okay. That's fine. It's the icebreaker. Let's know a little bit about you. So what we're going to do now, the next part, we tend to kind of start to talk to you about your diagnosis and your journey, to kind of, because, you know, everybody's story is different, isn't it? Or about the time we were diagnosed and, you know, how stuff has happened over the months and over the years. And so, if we break it down into diagnosis and then into your journey, and obviously, you know, talk as little or much as you like, and obviously, you know, it's a personal journey for you. So by all means, if I ask you something and you don't want to, you know, expand on stuff, just say so. We're all mates here and stuff. So
no worries.
So when were you diagnosed, and what happened in the lead up to that? Was it a slow burner, or was your DKA into hospital, or was it, you know, did you have any symptoms, or did the classic 40s, or what happened?
Yeah, so I was 14 when I was diagnosed, and there's a few like incidents that stick in my mind before I was diagnosed that made me think definitely it was at least a couple of months before. One was I was on a coach journey from Birmingham to Glasgow, and instead of water for the journey, I got like 1 liter of orange juice, and then I just could not stop drinking, and I was constantly like going to the toilet, and my brother was getting really annoyed at me. And then when I got back, my mum made a joke, and she was like, maybe you have diabetes. And that was a month before I was diagnosed, so it was obviously still quite early. And I did lose quite a bit of weight, but I was always a wee bit of a chubby kid, so I wasn't underweight. And 6 days before I was diagnosed, I had my dad's wedding, and I was a bridesmaid, and my bridesmaid dress was hanging off me because I'd lost a wee bit of weight. And everyone kept coming up to me and they were like, oh, Alyssa, you look amazing. Like, what diet have you went on? Like, putting their hands around my waist. And then I was going around and drinking the dregs of everyone's, like, soft drink cans, because I was so thirsty. I just could not quench the thirst. And then on the Friday, so that was 6 days after my dad's wedding, I got really lightheaded and, like, nearly fell down the stairs. Are you okay? Do you need to take a break?
No, not at all. I forgot to turn my pump back on.
Oh. No problem.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, so I got really lightheaded and like was on the stairs when it happened, and then my friend was like, oh, just go home and rest. Like, it can't hurt to rest for the rest of the day. Called my mum and said, I'm going home. She's like, I'm gonna book a doctor's appointment for you because I'm really worried. And I thought, I'm lying about this. I don't actually feel unwell. I'm skiving school. And I went home and ate loads of crisps. My mum called me and said, I got your doctor's appointment. Don't eat anything. And then
it sounds as though your mum kind of had suspicions.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. Because she was in my school earlier in the week, and she saw a poster in the nurse's office that was the 40s. So she knew about it, but she also was prompted by the Diabetes UK 40s poster, toilet, thirsty, tired, dinner. And she was like, Alyssa's on that Friday when I said I'm going home, she's like, right, this is enough. We're just getting you checked over. We went to the nurse. We got an emergency nurse appointment at the GP. Went to the nurse, and my mum said, this is what I have suspicions of. The nurse said, it's definitely not diabetes. She's too young. Wow. But just to ease your mind, we'll book her in for a blood test on Monday, because this was Friday afternoon. Mum said it takes 10 seconds to do a blood, like a prick.
Yeah.
Just do it. And then my blood sugar was 28. So it turns out it wasn't in DKA, because my mum caught it really early. But I could have been on the Monday if we'd waited. And then the nurse called up to the GP and said, I've just diagnosed someone with type 1. And I was like, no, he didn't. My mum diagnosed me. But I was only in the hospital for one day to learn how to do the injections.
Okay.
Did all my management myself right from the start. So my mum's never given me an injection or anything. But yeah, that was my diagnosis story.
And I mean, how did you, you know, how is there any history of type 1 in the family or you know, relations or?
No, not at all. My auntie had diabetes, but she had an operation on her pancreas. So my mum knew about diabetes because of that, but. Yeah. It wasn't genetic, but I have a family history of thyroid, which might be why. But the thing is, we haven't. A lot of people say their diabetes was triggered by a specific illness, but I can't think of a time leading up to that that I had an illness that could have triggered it. So it it was quite out of the blue.
Okay. And you know how you've said you kind of cracked on, like, you know, like I presume. You know, at our age, as kids, we tend to be fairly flexible, and you know, you're told to do something, and off you go and do it. I mean, how did it affect your parents? And have you got siblings?
Yeah, so I lived full time with my mum. My dad didn't really take an active part in my diabetes, so when I went over to his house, I kind of dealt with it all myself.
Okay.
I have siblings. Yeah, I have three siblings that I lived with, and they were quite jealous of
the attention
that I was getting, yeah. But also, especially my sister, who I was really close with, I would say she's kind of traumatised by the severe hypos that I had, so she did take quite a big part in making sure that I was safe when I was unwell. So now whenever I'm hypo around her, like my pump alarms, she, like, you can see her face just freak out.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so that's unfortunate. But right from the start, I kind of was quite independent with it. So my mum might help me with carb count a wee bit. But apart from that, they would make sure I'm safe. But I would do the majority of things.
Okay. And you mentioned about your sister. I mean, did that kind of, that protectiveness, overreaction, you know, kind of, you know, panic, did that kind of affect you? I know from what I had an older brother, and he became fiercely protective, and I used to sometimes resent that, you know, to resent some of the attention that he'd give, because it was all about, you know, I've got to do this myself, this is my independence. I mean, how did you feel about your sister, you know, having that, you know, that having that overreaching protectiveness to you?
Well, the thing is, she's not really overprotective because she doesn't want to deal with it. So unless I'm actively hypo in front of her, in which case she'll force feed me. She tries not to get involved, which sometimes I feel like I can't discuss diabetes with her. But apart, like, it's fine now. We're both adults. But when I was younger, she would help me when I was hypo, but apart from that, she didn't really want to know.
Yeah. So, okay. So, that's your diagnosis. Not a lot of time in hospital. Well, jealous. I had about a week.
Unlucky. I even had, for that one day, I had a private room.
Oh, so, God.
I got a teenage room, so it was really nice, actually. I enjoyed it.
Oh, wow. Okay, so, journey, diagnosis, we've done journey. So how's your diagnosis, so how's your diabetes journey progressed over the years? What do you do now that you kind of didn't do before? I mean, how, you know, detail some of the stuff you started doing when you were young, diagnosed. I mean, pens, presumably pens, and finger pricks, and kind of how is your tech and control kind of has progressed over the years?
So it's been 10 years. I was actually only on pens for, or multiple daily injections for 6 months. Because I had a severe hypo quite at the start, like early at the start. And so they were like, let's get her on a pump, like as soon as we can. So I was on the Medtronic Mini Med 6 months after I was diagnosed. So that's over 10 years ago.
Okay.
So I've been on tech for a while, and I think I'd struggle if I had to go back to multiple daily injections now, because it's just been so long. And I went on to a Medtronic CGM 6 months after that, so just under 10 years ago, because this wasn't on the procurement list in Scotland to have CGMs, so my team had to put a business case in with the NHS to get a special case for funding. And the first time they put it in, the case failed. And so they ended up having to put it in again and fight for me to get this tech, just because they wanted the safeguard feature, which is when the insulin suspends when your blood sugar is going low. So they applied for that just to make sure that if I had a seizure or a hypo, I wouldn't have a seizure, and just to give me that backup safety. So I've been on tech. I was one of the first people in Scotland to have this tech, and the first person in my area, which is really nice. It's like a wee piece of history that I feel like I've been a part of. And I was on Medtronic for 8 years. So I got the Medtronic Mini Med pump, and like a purple Mini Med. And then I was on, I think it's 670 or 640, maybe 640, I think, 640G Medtronic, and Guardian 3. After that, so, and then 2 years ago I moved on to Tandem T-Slim and Dexcom, because I know I wanted a closed loop, but I didn't like, honestly, it was a vain reason. I didn't like the look of the Medtronic sensors on me, because they got quite grubby throughout the time it's on.
Okay.
And I just didn't like the look of it, and I thought the Medtronic ones look cool, you can have stickers on them. And I've heard good things about Control IQ. So that's the reason I picked Tandem. And also the area that I lived in, Glasgow, had those two options on the go.
With your previous pumps, was you able to kind of look at DIYing closed loop, or was that something that kind of you didn't really want to take the risk?
Yeah, it was I knew it was an option, and I knew it was a good option, actually, and especially considering my history. Like I don't like going low, so a lot of the time I would go higher, and that would have helped me. But first of all, I'm a person who goes for the easy option, and I didn't look into it. But also when I moved to university, I really struggled to do anything to do with my diabetes for reasons that I don't really want to talk about, like in a major thing. Like, I don't like talking about it. But so I just decided not to do it, and just wait for the technology to be licensed, and mostly for reasons because I'm lazy.
I know that obviously with DIY loop has been a journey that some people have taken, just I think out of wanting to kind of better things for themselves.
I've already always had that safeguard feature right from the start, and that was really what I wanted out of a pump, was just to be safe if I had a hypo. And I have had that for the majority of my diabetes, so it's just something that I never really considered until like the past few years, where I've really tried to, when I've thought I really need to take diabetes seriously now. And then that's when I asked about the hybrid closed loop.
And getting as you were going through that business case processing, what was the kind of highs and lows? Did you feel it was having to kind of rely on the decisions of others to approve the funding? I mean, tell me a little bit about kind of how you felt at the time?
It's very frustrating, and I think the majority of people in this call will be able to, they will understand the pain of knowing that someone else in an area of the NHS has access to the technology that you really need, and yet for some reason you're being denied access. It's frustrating relying on other people, and especially when my doctors were like, we really think you need this, we think you'll get it, and then getting a decision saying, actually no, you're not worthy enough of that or something, is really disheartening. I think I dealt with it pretty well though, and actually the doctors I was in, Ayrshire and Arran, which is an area of Scotland, a lot of areas would fight like that for their patient, because they did, this especially the second time, they put a lot of effort into this business case. I didn't have any involvement in it at all, only knew the decisions and outcomes, but I'm very glad that they fought for me. And like, I went to an event in London called the British Medical Journal Awards a few years ago and spoke at it and talked to all the doctors and was just basically like, don't take the easy route, like fight for your patients if you think they need it, because the NHS is bureaucratic, they try to save money, and that may not always be in the best interest of your patient. And don't be afraid to fight for it. So thankfully my doctors were in that mindset at that time, and I managed to get it, but it could not be the case for someone in a different NHS area, and I was very lucky to get it.
It's so amazing, isn't it, having, you know, and having, you know, healthcare professionals, DSNs and consultants who kind of, you know, have that view that it's always about the patient and never about the money.
I find especially pediatric, like I feel like pediatric doctors have a lot of empathy, and I just loved my team when I was a child. And the adult HCPs are amazing, but they have more people on their caseload and a lot more stress and a lot less money. And I find that difficult, just to know that I am a small cog in a massive machine, and unless something serious, very serious happens, people might not take notice. And I find that really hard to comprehend, that like why do I matter less than someone else just because they have it worse? Like, yeah, it's equity, not equality. Yeah, it's a hard one.
Talking about, I mean, how you've mentioned what an amazing team you had in paediatrics. What happened, how did you find the move from paediatric into, you know, into, if you like, quote unquote grown up, you know, was that smooth? Were you able to have the same kind of relationships with your new consultants and new team, or?
I have to say, I moved away to uni, so I moved to a different health board.
Okay.
So I went straight, I think my clinic had a young adults clinic, so it wasn't a transition, but they primarily had like 16 to 25 year olds in there. So it was a lot nicer, you didn't have to go to clinic with a lot of older people. Right. But because I struggled when I was at uni just with management and stuff, I saw my team quite a lot. They wanted to make sure I was okay and stuff. So I did, like, that experience was really good. I haven't had any major problems with my teams, to be honest. I feel like I'm quite good at advocating for myself and asking for what I need, which some people may not be able to do. But I've always had quite a good experience. Sometimes they don't have capacity, or they say, oh, I'll see you in a year. But if you message them or email them and say, can I see you sooner, they always will. So that's what I normally do.
Okay, yeah. Good. So last question. What do you wish you'd known when you were newly diagnosed? In other words, you're speaking to 14-year-old, newly diagnosed Alyssa now. What piece of advice, anything to say to her? It's just, you know, diabetes or non-diabetes.
Yeah, I think about this quite a lot, and how when you have diabetes, you're expected to do exactly the same thing as your peers, even though you have a chronic health condition that affects your body quite a lot. So I think it would be, don't be afraid to rest, because I don't do that enough, and often my body needs it, and I get super tired and burnt out because of it. Don't be afraid to rest, because you need more rest than everyone else, and I think that's okay.
Brilliant. Yeah, sounds, I don't know what I'd say to me.
It's a really hard question.
I think that is brilliant advice to give to someone, isn't it? To actually rest and take a breather and slow things down slightly.
Like, the reality is we sometimes can't do exactly the same things as everyone else. Like, we can still achieve great things, but we may need to take a step back sometimes, and I find that hard to comprehend still, but maybe if I'd known it from the start, that would be easier.
And
I think it's that as well as, you know, being more open to asking for help as well, asking for understanding. To you mentioned time, you know, and at the start of the conversation about the 15 minutes that you take when you have a hypo, you take as downtime. A lot of us don't, you know, but a lot of us feel really vulnerable about letting people down. And so rather than trying to recover, because it's a physical as well as an emotional thing that's just happened to us, rather than taking that kind of 5, 10, 15 minutes, but most of us just blind on. Because
I know, and the thing is, we're not allowed to drive for 45 minutes after we have a hypo.
Yeah.
But yet when we have a hypo in other situations, we just jump straight back in, even though cognitively our brain isn't actually like ready yet. It still needs to rest.
It's a very strong point, and Diabetic Crosby says, I love that advice, and says if we're taking them 180 more decisions per day, then we're going to get tired, isn't it? And that just values the point that you've made even more so, Alyssa, that, you know what I mean, if we are making them 180 decisions on top of everything we're doing, and we always say this, then, you know what I mean, we do need that self-care, looking after ourselves. And I know I'm my biggest enemy, and I'll sort of preach it to support other people, and I kind of keep going myself, but it's a food for thought for me, and I totally, the conversation you're having about hypos and recovering and going back to work or going back to do something, I know what you mean. And it's hard, but we have to look after our bodies and ourselves and our minds and our mental health.
Self-care is not always a face mask, but it's just letting ourselves recover.
Amazing.
Brilliant. Well, that's my bit done. Claire?
Well, thank you very much, Tony.
Thank you, Alyssa.
You mentioned, Alyssa, that you suffer with hypo seizures. Can you explain what they are and what triggers them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've had seizures before, even before I was diagnosed. And initially, I had a few seizures, which are triggered by low blood sugar. So being very clear, sometimes I have them when I'm really low, or I used to have them when I was really low, like 2.4. I've had a couple where I've been like 3.8. And it was the seizures that were triggered when I was only slightly low that made the team realise these are not true hypo-seizures. We think something else might be going on. So I was referred to the neurology clinic, who did an EEG, which is an electro something gram, and they put stickers on your head and they test your brain waves, and they said, yeah, you have epilepsy. And so I have a couple of triggers. One of them is flashing lights. So apparently flashing lights at certain frequencies can trigger my epilepsy, but my main trigger, which is really unfortunate, is low blood sugar. And it's unfortunate, because when you're diabetic, having low blood sugar is something that you can, is really hard to avoid fully, because life is so unpredictable. So for that reason, I'm really scared of hypos. And there was one hypo seizure that made my healthcare team take it seriously. When I was 16, I was on a diabetes camp actually, and we went in a swimming pool, and I didn't have my technology, my smart guard on, because we were swimming and it wasn't waterproof back then. There was a group of us, and we decided to go on the water slide, and I felt like I was going low on the water slide in the queue, and I decided, you know what, my hypo treatment is on the other side of the water slide, so I'll just wait in the queue, go down the water slide so I don't have to walk, and I'll get my hypo treatment on the other side and it will all be fine. And then I remember going on the water slide, and then I remember waking up on the other side, like with people standing all around me, and I'd had a hypo seizure on the flumes, and I'd been pulled out of the water at the bottom. And that was when people were like, okay, we need to take this a bit more seriously. She nearly died. They ended up calling an air ambulance. Thankfully didn't need that, because the lifeguard was doing his job very well. But yeah, that freaked everyone out. A wee bit freaked me out. So
can understand why you worried about hypos.
Yeah.
How's the hybrid closed looping helped with managing your hypo seizures and your diabetes and your epilepsy?
It's been great. So even before I was on the closed loop, when I had the safeguard, which is still a feature of the closed loop, I set my targets higher than everyone else is told to. My targets are like 5.5 to 10 instead of like 4 to 8. But to be honest, before I had the closed loop, a lot of the time I would, because I was so scared of going hypos, because I've had them on the bus, I've had them like walking down the street by myself, and it's really scary. I would run my bloods higher a lot more often, a higher like 14 to 20. And having the closed loop has helped me so much, because I obviously have severe anxiety about hypos, so I would just run higher, but the closed loop is kind of, it gives me the nudge, like it brings me back down into range every time. Every single time I get anxious about it, it just brings me right back down and says, nope, you're not being anxious today, and I go right back in range. And obviously when your blood sugar's higher, it makes my anxiety about it worse, because I just, my mental health goes to pot. So because I have the control IQ just bringing me down back into range, I feel better a lot of the time. My mental health is better. I have less anxiety about going low. And because it has saved me so often from going low, I feel more confident in it. And I haven't had one since April of last year. So it's a big achievement for me and my body.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
It takes us nicely into the next topic on mental health and peer support. So type 1 diabetes is commonly classed as a physical condition, but we all know that there's an emotional burden attached to it. Can you describe any experiences of diabetes stress or burnout, or your thoughts on it?
I think there's a reason why people with diabetes are more likely to experience mental health, and it is because with a lot of other conditions, you don't always have to constantly self-monitor and change your dose yourself. First of all, there's a lot of anxiety about making sure that you're doing the correct dose at all times, which a lot of conditions also don't have. I've experienced diabetes burnout a lot, particularly during university and my undergraduate degree. It was so bad. Issues around eating, constantly monitoring, and I actually have a diagnosis of depression, which I'm not sure if it's to do with diabetes, but diabetes does not make it any easier. And when I'm feeling really low, my diabetes isn't great, my control isn't great. But when my blood sugar is high, I then feel really depressed. So sometimes I'm like, am I feeling depressed today, or is my blood sugar high? So there's two different aspects to that. it's the constant management and worry, and then your blood sugar's fluctuating impacts your mental health so much, like so much. But I think that actually has been something that saved me quite a lot, is the peer support part of it. The friends I've made have been absolutely amazing. I was talking to one of my closest friends now who is diabetic as well. And sometimes when I hang out with my friends without diabetes, I forget they're not diabetic, because now I have so many friends that are. And then when they ask me questions, I'm like, oh, right, you actually don't get it. So I find that funny now that a lot of my circle happen to be diabetic now, just because of how impactful to me and how amazing I find like the peer support element of it.
It is great peer support for people with diabetes. I totally agree with you there. What do you do to improve your mental health? Do you do any activities or any mindfulness?
I do a lot of exercise. I think it's something I've only in the past couple of years realised how much it helps me. And I just hate it, because when I was younger, the doctor was always like, oh, just do exercise and you'll feel better. And I was like, well, I can't do exercise because I feel really bad. But now I've started doing exercise more regularly. They're right. They're definitely right for me anyway. And so I play netball a couple, 2 to 3 times a week. And I'll go to the gym 2 or 3 times a week as well. And I won't lift heavy weights or anything, but even just moving my body helps me feel a lot better. Helps my blood sugar do better, and it just overall helps my mental health.
Thank you for that. You do a lot of diabetes advocacy work. Could you tell us a bit about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the first thing is I have run a blog for 8 years called Pumptastic Scott, because and the name came from, I googled how to name a blog when I was 16, and it said the best way to name a blog is to make up a word. And I thought, you know what, I'm on an insulin pump and I'm fantastic, so Pumptastic. And where am I from? Scotland. So that's where my blog name came from. And at the start, a lot of the time I would post like diabetes memes on a blog and just publish that. And so it has been going for 8 years, but recently I've done a big refresh of it and taken down a lot of the old posts. Actually, I ended up losing them, so I can't access them anymore, which is a shame. That's why I deleted them all, because I didn't actually mean to. I'm just bad at technology. but now I focus more on, I'm trying to focus less on my own journey, because I really burnt myself out talking about my own diabetes journey like every single week on my blog. And so I thought, okay, I need to protect my own mental health here. I can't talk about myself constantly. Sometimes it's fine, but not all the time. So I now try and post like guest bloggers quite a lot. Sometimes I'll post about what's going on in the diabetes community. Last week I posted a blog about the Zoe CGM and my thoughts on that and why I think it's harmful. But I'm hoping to do more of that. I'm quite involved in the advocacy scene in Scotland. Diabetes Scotland run a campaign called Diabetes Tech Can't Wait, which I'm quite involved in. And I'm involved in the Young Leaders Project with Diabetes Scotland, which has recently transitioned to a programme called Together Type 1, which is for young adults up to the age of 25, which I am going to age out of this year, which is unfortunate. That's so sad, because I've been involved since I was 16. and I recently, last year, became a DDoC voice, which was such an amazing experience. And that's just a patient advocacy organisation, and they invite patient advocates from across the world to attend diabetes conferences. Get to experience that and then bring it back to their own community. And so I've done that through social media and my blog, and I'm going to be going to ATTD, Advanced Technology something in Diabetes, which is held in Florence next month, and I'm so excited to do that. And I'm hoping, I've got a whole plan for my blog about what I'm going to do and what I'm going to focus on, and I'm so excited for that to happen. But honestly, I just do the things that I'm passionate about, and when I stop being passionate about it, I stop doing it, because at the end of the day, my mental health comes first.
Always.
Yeah, always.
Always, you need to look after yourself.
Yeah, 100%. And I actually took a massive break from advocacy for 3 years because, as I said, I was constantly talking about myself. I was talking about, like, diabetes and eating, like, in front of loads of people. And I would come away thinking it really, really upset. And I had took a few days to recover and thought, I can't do this anymore. And so I have a lot more boundaries about what I say yes to now and what I say no to, or who are, or say, well, why don't you go to this person? They're better equipped to do it than me, because there's so many people that are amazing in the diabetes community, so many highly skilled people. And I understand that I'm just one person, and sometimes I quite like highlighting when other people aren't as well known. I love referring those people on so they can get the opportunity, because I have had so many opportunities and I'm so grateful, and I want everyone to be able to experience these opportunities as well.
Thank you for that. What tips and advice would you give a young child or a parent with a child who has diabetes?
Oh gosh, that's really hard, because I've never been a parent of a kid with diabetes. I've only ever been a person with diabetes. Sometimes I just think, try not to be too stressed about it. Diabetes will throw you curveballs inevitably, and it's about, as the Diabetes UK Type 1 events people will know, about being proactive and flexible with it, and you can never plan for everything. So, kind of just get on with it. As long as you're prepared for things to go wrong, you're good. But that's easy for me to say, having never had a child with diabetes, because I can kind of control my own stuff, but I've never had to control anyone else's stuff that's out with my own body.
Thank you for that. Is there anything that you'd wish you'd known when you were newly diagnosed?
I wish I'd known how good technology was going to get, because at the start, everyone was saying, you know, a cure's around the corner, it's going to happen in 5 years. But I was just so sceptical, and I never realised how fast the technology would, like, be made and how fast it would be implemented, because as I said earlier, like, the bureaucratic processes in the NHS take so long. When someone said about the artificial pancreas, I was like, well, I'll be like 40 before any of that happens, so I'm just gonna live my life now. But I'm glad that it's all happened faster than I thought it would. I was always quite the skeptic. I'm trying to be less of a skeptic now, especially with the new T-Slim update. I was really scared when I got the opportunity to update my pump and move on to the G7. But I just thought, Alyssa, you got to be part of the change.
Okay, can we touch a little bit on the stigmas that are attached to diabetes? How does this make you feel, and what can be done to change people's perspectives?
Yeah, when I was younger and I was doing my blog, a lot of it would be focused on the diabetes stigmas and the misconceptions and the myths, because people would say things to me and I would get really upset and angry because I was quite self-conscious about having diabetes. But everyone who has a misconception or plays into a stigma, they just don't know any better yet. And so I think it's a lot of the time small scale education. So if someone says something to me, I always just say, actually, I don't, that's not true. I like to come in with my facts and say, this is the truth. These are the facts and figures, and make it an undisputable fact that they're wrong about it. But I actually quite like having these conversations, and then people are like, oh, I wonder what else I was wrong about. Like earlier on today, someone was talking to me about their family member who had type 2, and it's like, oh, they're just really unhealthy. And I was like, well, actually type 2 can be genetic as well, because that's another misconception. And they're like, oh, I really didn't think about it. Like, is type 1 genetic as well? And I was like, yeah. So it's literally just having conversations with people and spreading that awareness with your friends and family. And there's not a lot one person can do, so it's about everyone making sure that they're having those conversations with the people around them, and like making sure that if they see something in the media that they don't like, just kindly send in an email being like, actually you're wrong about that, I'd love it if you could clarify that point. Because yeah, it's a really hard one about the stigma. I don't get upset about it in the same way as I used to when I was younger, but yeah, I just try and have small conversations with people.
Yeah, same as I do. I mean, I'm type 2 at the moment, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah.
But I've had people say, oh, you've become diabetic because you've had too many sweets, or you're not eating properly. And it's about raising awareness and, again, correcting people when they're wrong. And
yeah, and even just after they're not, even if they're wrong, but they're disrespectful or passive about type 1 or type 2 and being like, I don't really appreciate that language, it's really hard to live with. If someone says, oh, they don't control their diabetes, they have so many hypos, just correcting them and being like, well, actually having hypos, that doesn't mean you're a bad diabetic. Just, it's literally just correcting people when they're wrong, like making sure that the small comments don't go unchecked, and you're totally right, just making sure that the stigma doesn't continue.
Yeah, totally. The last question I've got is, what are your hopes and aspirations for yourself and diabetes care and management for the future?
I hope that I can continue to live the life that I want to lead. And honestly, that is my main goal. I want to be able to continue in my career. I want to play netball. And I want to be able to do the fun stuff outside of work. And honestly, that's my goal. And I think diabetes advocacy and all diabetes care should be about that, making sure that people can live the life they want to lead without too much interference from diabetes.
That's wonderful. Yeah, that's what we all hope for, I think.
Yeah.
How can people contact you on your social media channels? Your blog?
I don't know if Tom wants to jump in. He has his hand up.
I just wanted to ask a couple of questions myself, but I'll let you do that bit, and then I'll ask away if that's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it in the script, Tom?
No.
Okay, are we freestyling it now, aren't we?
We're gonna freestyle it, Tony.
Yeah, cool. Oh no, only joking.
Yeah, if people want to contact me, honestly, just give me a message. I try to reply to all the messages. I am busy, but I will get back to people eventually. If anyone wants to be a guest blogger on the blog, I am so open to those conversations. I want to raise the voices of other people. So if you want to have a guest blog, give me a message and I'll get back to you on like Twitter, on Instagram, on TikTok, if you're on there. Or there's actually a button on my blog at the bottom to subscribe, so you get updates from me when I post the blog. But yeah, honestly open to all chats if anyone wants to give me a message.
Thank you for that. Right, I'll pass you back over to Tom to ask his question.
Thanks very much, Claire.
Amazing chat, honestly has been. I just wanted to follow up on a couple of things. You mentioned obviously the Diabetes Tech Can't Wait campaign, and obviously the fabulous guys have come on. We've done a diabetes chat on that. What got you involved in that? Like, and what is involved in the campaign of what what you've been part of, and what excites you about the future of the campaign itself?
Yeah, so I got involved initially with that because I have been very privileged to be in areas that have given me tech almost straight away as soon as I'd wanted it. So when I was in Glasgow has is quite what they would call underprivileged. They get a lot more funding for things like diabetes technology just because of the high rates of poverty. So when I was living in Glasgow, they immediately put me on an insulin pump closed loop when I'd asked. But when I moved to Edinburgh and they said, oh, we don't fund that pump, we might not be able to put like keep funding it, they did, thank goodness. But I got a shock and I was like, well, really, this isn't fair. Like, why should the people in Edinburgh not be able to access the same technology that has changed my life the same way? It didn't make sense to me, and I wanted to campaign to make sure that other people had access to technologies that are literally life-saving, can add years to people's life, can make their quality of life so much better.
Yeah.
And even basic CGMs have access to them. That was the reason I decided to get involved, and they had a share your story bit, so I shared my story, I talked to them, and I have been like writing to my MPs to try and get them involved. So we did end up getting a wee bit of funding for making sure the dissemination of insulin pumps and closed loops, but we didn't get extra funding for more closed loop systems. And because in Scotland, England, Wales, they all have different devolved healthcare. So currently, it all looks different. So I think there is a diabetes tech campaign in England as well. And so the diabetes tech campaign is changing slightly because England have just announced more money to get hybrid closed loops. And so I think this is going to be announced by Diabetes Scotland later next week, but they're changing tact and trying to be like, well, England have this, why aren't we getting this? We need more money for this. You can't be behind in England. So though it has been a successful campaign, there's still not fair and equal access to diabetes technology across all the health boards in Scotland, especially in the rural parts of Scotland. So yeah, it's going to be continuing. It's going to be changing focus. Mm-hmm. And I'm very proud of how far it's gone so far.
Yeah, I think you should be. Super, super proud. And the team at Diabetes UK, Dan and people like that, and then amazing people, lived experience people like yourself and Paul and Leslie and Ali and Stephen. You know what I mean? So many pioneers of amazing people fighting for equal access and equality, and I think it's brilliant everything that you guys are doing, and hopefully we bridge that gap sooner rather than later. And
yeah, I hope so, because I was told that I could get G7 when I called, and they said yes, no problem to that. I know another health board in Scotland where someone got G7 straight away, and I got an email today being like, actually in Edinburgh we're not doing it yet, so you can't have it. And I was like, why they have it in that health board, and they're like, sorry, NHS bureaucracy. And I'm like, but you told me I could have it, and they're like, sorry, my manager said no. Oh. So it's not fair and equal access.
It's a bit like going into McDonald's, isn't it, and saying, can I have a, I don't know, can I have a Big Mac? Well, no, you can't have a Big Mac because we don't do it, but the McDonald's up the road does do it. It's such a ludicrous, standards for
it's so board. Frustrating.
It's just, it'd be a national agreement on criteria, but it just seems to by area mad. And that's
it is, and it's my opinion as well. And also, like, you can tell that the healthcare professionals on the ground want these things to happen, and that's where I get frustrated, because I feel helpless, the healthcare professionals feel helpless, but unfortunately the manager who holds the purse strings are saying, actually, sorry, maybe next week.
Yeah, especially as well when we see the evidence of the impacts of how this technology is helping improve people's lives, the quality of life, be able to maybe reduce some burden slightly, help with them 180 decisions. Obviously, there's still a lot of work that needs to go into this technology, okay? We need to acknowledge that. But we can see the huge benefits of this technology. We obviously has been approved now in England with the TA, so that's obviously great, the science and everything behind it, and let's hope the movements in the next couple of years that, you know what I mean, my oh, biggest
but the thing is at the last diabetes, they call them the cross party groups at Parliament, and we went to it, and one of the leading doctors in diabetes says they've all acknowledged, so the people who give the funding, we've acknowledged that having the closed loop reduces complications in the future. All the science is there, they know this.
Yeah.
But they said, sorry, we don't have the money to invest in this right now.
And that's what's so frustrating.
It's not cost them more in the long run. They don't have the money currently to invest in making sure those complications don't happen in 10 years. And they know it and they can't do anything about it.
That is so frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, when they literally know, like, they've acknowledged it, but we can't do anything about it. You do feel helpless.
Brilliant chat, honestly. I've really enjoyed it. What was the last thing I was going to ask? You mentioned, obviously, DDoC Voice. What made you sort of go through that process, like, in applying to become a DDoC Voice? And you obviously mentioned you've done some stuff with them before, and you're obviously going to the ATTD. Is there anything particular at the ATTD event that you're looking forward to learn about, or networking with people? Is there anything you're looking forward to from that event or coming next month, right?
I was invited to Diabetes UK Professional Conference in 2019 as a blogger, and so I went along to that healthcare conference, and I loved that. I loved all the science. I used to want to be a doctor. I'm so interested in it all, and sometimes I feel like I'm underestimated in what knowledge I can retain. So I love hearing all the science, all the new technology, and what happened was at the professional conference, they had the insider conference the next day, and they picked and chose what they thought people with diabetes would want to know. And I went to the insider and was so disappointed, because the things they chose were so not the things that I was interested in at the main conference. And so it was actually my friend Jean Langford, who was on here a couple of weeks ago, who she is involved in DDoC. She's been involved for a long time, and she said, why don't you apply for this, like, I think you'll love it. And so I applied, and I know from past that I'm not interested in virtual conferences because I just find it really hard to engage, but I put down I'll go in person, and they don't normally accept people in person on the first time they go. They like to have them do a virtual, but they accepted me, and I went to Rotterdam last year, and I love all of the scientific stuff. I'm just so passionate about it. And so in ATTD, I'm so excited to hear about all the new technologies, all the innovation, and also just be around people who are equally passionate about all of these things and be able to talk about it and how excited I am. In Rotterdam, I had a debate with Medtronic about climate change and sustainability for Medtronic products, and I just found it so much fun.
Amazing.
And then next week there's a DDoC call. They're doing a kind of fundraiser awareness raising thing, and so I'm going to be speaking at that next week as well.
Just keep up this amazing work that you're doing. Obviously, like you say, is do it in your own sort of pace, and as we've sort of acknowledged this evening, one of the most important messages I got out tonight is to self-care and look after yourself. But we got Moses who messaged, he says, it was nice to meet you, Alyssa, in Rotterdam when I guess Moses saw you there. We've had some lovely messages coming through on Twitter, coming through. Let's have a look. Loving the chat with Alyssa. You speak so much sense and just a breath of fresh air. keep being the voice you are. That's from Adele. And then just lots of people just agreeing with what you're saying and your points you're saying. And then Laura was talking about the smell of insulin back at the start of the chat as well. And a few people over on YouTube as well, following the conversation. Thank you so much. Thanks for adding, answering them last minute questions from me. Tony, Claire, was there anything else from you guys before wrapping up this chat and we'll go into our open forum?
No, not at all. It's been absolutely brilliant for me to talk to Alyssa and it's been an absolute honour. I feel kind of overwhelmed by an amazingness of being a fantastic advocate for, you know, our condition. It's just achieved so much already. It's been great. Thank you. Thanks
so much for talking to me, Tony. You've been amazing. Thanks.
I just want to add my thanks to the equation too. Thanks, Alyssa. It's been absolutely brilliant talking to you.
Yeah, great talking to you too. Nice to virtually meet you.